All right, welcome back to the Bible class debrief, Tim and Micah. Tim and Micah, what ground did we cover today?
We covered lessons 1.8 and 1.9. So this is the promise, the curse on the serpent, the promise of the seed that will crush the serpent's head, and then the consequences of the fall for humanity.
Okay, so let's start with that, the curse on the serpent. How did you go about teaching this bit? This is kind of a central passage for the whole curriculum. In fact, the original name for the curriculum is He Shall Crush His Head. So this takes a pretty central place. Did that come out as you were teaching it, Tim?
Yeah, I sort of challenged them to think through, you know, what other stories can you think of where there's a head crushing. And they actually had a fair amount of trouble. Like, they came up with David and Goliath right away.
Okay.
And then had a fair amount of trouble coming up with more. So it became like, I didn't really give them much.
Uh-huh.
I just went, well, okay, so hold on to that thought. We will be coming back to it. Also, you guys don't read Joshua and Judges much, do you?
What about you, Micah? How did you approach it?
Yeah, I actually did the same exact thing. And I kind of stole your idea from last week. I was like, can you think of any people who are snakes in the in the Old Testament who get their head crushed? And then, yeah, David and Goliath was the obvious one. And yeah, they had trouble thinking of others as well. So I essentially said the same thing. I was like, well, note the name of the book and look for that because it's going to be a thing. And one of them wanted to suggest, although this didn't quite work, the woman that has John the Baptist's head cut off.
That came up in my class too.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Well, that's interesting because that would be another inversion, right?
Right.
So you are expecting Herod to get his head cut off, and instead he cuts off the head of the good guy, which I think is a foreshadowing of Jesus, because Jesus again is in the position of the one getting his head crushed. You have this big inversion, and it's only when you get the resurrection of Jesus that the inversion makes sense. The ultimate head crushing comes after the death of the head crusher.
And that actually came up in, well, Jesus came up and does the, one of my girls, does the crown of thorns count as a head crushing? I'm like, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to that next year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting that they brought up places where the head, you know, the head, the one getting his head hurt is the hero. Which is, and I think I mentioned this in the other podcast last week, is the five kings of Judges are kind of the opposite of that. They, you know, they got their heads crushed, but they look like they got, you know, their heads stepped on and they were hung on trees and put in a cave just like Jesus. But the stone did not get rolled away. That's cool. It's interesting that that's what came to the surface. So those were the David and Goliath and with the crown of thorns and John the Baptist were the stories that
those were the ones they came up with. Yeah.
Wow. I'm kind of surprised. Was that surprising to you,
Tim? I thought we'd get a little more than that. I'm not surprised that, I mean, the stories that you, but I expected somebody to come up with JL.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the woman who drops the millstone on Abimelech, like I expected those to come up and they just didn't.
Yeah, that's to me, that's kind of telling about how churches are ultimately training kids, right?
Yeah.
You think so, Micah?
Yeah, which is concerning because a lot of them are in my youth group, so.
If only we knew their youth pastor and could do something about that.
But yeah, that is interesting. This is a bit of a tangent, but in my high school class, we talked about Marcionism a little bit. And a thing I stole from you, is like how those early heresies are temptations. And like, we have a temptation to ignore the Old Testament or kind of think of it as irrelevant. And yeah, I feel like that's showing up a lot, and that's concerning. So let's not do that.
And you have, you know, you have your first tier stories, you know, that like people know, think of David and Goliath, because that's one of the big Old Testament stories that every kid is going to learn, along with, you know, along with a half a dozen others, the Exodus and those kind of things. They all know those main stories. But interestingly, those kind of first tier stories often don't have the head crushing element that's actually quite prevalent in the Old Testament.
Yeah, it's interesting. The head crushing element is kind of there in the Exodus, but you got to work for that one.
Right.
It's not obvious in the way it is like with Goliath or with Jael.
Well, and like with another example would be stories about Abraham. All, you know, kids have all heard about Abraham's call, you know, the Abraham sacrificing Isaac. There's some big Abraham stories that they're familiar with, but they aren't familiar with when the, you know, what the five kings come down and attack and take Lot, and Abraham chases after him and rescues. You know, this is the closest we get to kind of a head crushing story in the story of Abraham, but that's one that kids don't know. And if kids know Judges, they know Samson. So it kind of surprised me Samson didn't come up, because that would be first tier stuff, right?
Yeah, it would be. And yeah, it didn't.
Of course, Samson is usually told as Samson is kind of a bad guy. And they, you know, skip over to the end of his life when he pushes the columns and knocks the building down. Okay, so you're up against, the opportunity here is that you get to do this with the kids. You get to lay it all out for them over the course of this year. That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Okay, so the promise is that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent. Did you go so far as to, you know, point to where this is headed? Were they familiar with this as kind of the proto-gospel? Or was this kind of a new concept? Did you point to Jesus directly, or are you holding off on that, Micah?
I pointed to Jesus directly, and we kind of talked about the seed of the woman, eventually is Jesus, and how we're going to see pictures of Jesus throughout the Old Testament from now on. And then, kind of jumping to the next lesson a little bit, we talked about like how Jesus provides clothes for them. And that's like a prophetic picture of Jesus covering us. So yeah, we talked about that, and I asked them to identify, just like if you can identify the snake people, like, can you identify the people that are going to look like Jesus in the Old Testament?
So what did I come up with some examples there?
Well, it's interesting. When you mentioned Lot, that reminded me when we were talking about the snakes, I did have one student say, so was Lot a snake, or was he like a good person? Which I don't know if he really fits either of those, but that did come up. Lot came up.
The New Testament treats him as righteous.
Right.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the passage, but there's a place where righteous Lot is mentioned in the New Testament. Which is interesting, because you know, you read that story and that's not the first
not the first adjective that comes to mind for Lot.
Which is interesting, for sure. Yeah. So yeah, again, David was an obvious one. I'm trying to think. Oh, someone did say Deborah, which I was proud of.
Oh, good.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
Interesting. How about you, Tim? Did you point directly to Jesus?
I didn't. I'm saving that for next week.
Okay.
Because what I majored on there is the first thing out of God's mouth. This is much worse than dad gave you a car for your 16th birthday and you wrecked it. You know, dad gave you the world and you broke it. The whole thing. Ruined everything.
Right.
And the first thing out of dad's mouth is there's going to be a rematch and the good guys are going to win.
Nice.
And I worked that hard as a, like, this is the first thing you have to know when you screw up in life is God has a way of making rematches where the good guys win. And I'm holding off on the seed because I want to really work. God said the seed of the woman is going to crush the serpent's head. And then she has a kid.
Right.
And I want to drive that one into the ground. Cain is the answer. And then he blows it.
Yeah.
As a like, oh, this is going to be a much longer problem than we thought. And I want to really work that next week. So I didn't. There's a rematch coming. That's it.
Nice. Good. Okay. So I guess associated with this is did you talk about the serpent being Satan and the idea that Satan's head was going to be crushed, or was that, again, you kind of leave that hanging?
I kind of left that background.
Okay.
We did talk some about, again, I'm laying in for later, but we talked some, what's the before, we know what the after picture looks like with the snake, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the before picture look like? Did he have legs? Did he have wings?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do have, you know, I'm happy to say demonically inspired religions that worship a feathered serpent. Like,
yeah,
is that a, you know, is that what's going on here? We kind of don't know. And my kids got onto a jag speculating that maybe it's a centipede, kind of like a daddy long legs centipede kind of situation. So, you know, rattlesnakes moving along like 5 feet off the ground on, you know, 1,000 long spindly legs. And if I get calls about the nightmares they have tonight, that one's on me.
I definitely saw some faces when we're talking about head crushing. There were a few kids that were kind of like, looked a little scared.
Well, they will get used to the idea this year. Right. I can assure you that.
It gets much worse.
Okay, so any last thoughts on verses 14 and 15? Or should we move on to the rest of the chapter? Moving on then. Then after the serpent, after he addresses the serpent, God turns to the woman and talks about childbearing. And specifically lays out the kind of consequences for the fall for the woman. How did you approach that, Micah?
Yeah, we just talked about how each of the curses connect directly to their jobs, and how, like, it kind of says in the book, like, this is connected to the be fruitful and multiply thing. They still have their jobs that they're supposed to do. Like, we still have a job to take care of the earth and to be fruitful and multiply, but now it's been made difficult. And like we talked about, like, imagine, you know, in heaven, I'm sure there will be work, but it's not going to be painful work. Yeah. So we talked about how now our work here is painful.
Mm. Tim?
Same. We spent a good bit of time. The pain in childbirth is a fairly obvious one that they've all heard before. So you don't have to work real hard for that one.
Yeah.
You know, connect it to, you know, could. I did have one kid who was like, if they hadn't sinned, I think we wouldn't be here. It would just be them in the garden and everything be great. I'm like, how are they supposed to subdue the earth then all by themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, yeah. Right. So they were always going to have kids. And once we got that dot connected, that one's easy.
Yeah.
Getting the second half of it, the desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you, and how the relationship has gone sour. Both, I suspect there's some formal consequence built in there, but like natural consequence. Adam just threw his wife under the bus.
Right.
Like 10 minutes after God leaves, just imagine the conversation, right? That woman you gave me. Really? Really, Adam? That's what you could come up with?
Right.
I'll just be over here. He's like, no. I'm going to change your name. We're going to call you Eve. Now, I'll be answering to that woman you gave me from now on. Like, and we kind of played with this with the kids a little bit. Like, how would you feel? Come on. The relationship's gone a little spiky.
Yeah.
And there's real consequences with that. And that hit, like that made sense to them as a, like having to take care of yourself and the power struggle that comes of wanting other people to do what you need them to do and they don't wanna, and how that tension, even within a marriage. And we did a little bit like argument, lesser to greater, like if that's the way it is, even within a marriage, how much worse for everything else?
Yeah. Micah, did you get into the part about your desire will be for your husband, he will rule over you?
A little bit. I mentioned the verse and one of the kids in my class raised his hand and he was like, when I read that, it just made me sad. Like no one should rule over another person. And it's like, yeah, like this idea that people are struggling to rule over each other in this unhealthy way is, it's like part of how the world is broken. And like, that's an appropriate response. It is sad. So that's really all we talked about with that. But yeah.
Interesting.
That's, yeah.
I'm glad that they, that was an observation from the kids. Cause that is not the way it's supposed to be.
Right. Yeah.
And broken, you know, kind of a broken relationships within a marriage are so pervasive from here in Genesis 3 on to today. And it is not the way it's supposed to be. Okay, so then God turns to Adam, because you listened to your wife and ate fruit from the tree which you commanded you must not eat. Cursed is the ground. And he goes on from there to talk about labor and toil and ultimately returning to the dust. What did you get into on that one?
We spend entirely too much time on the fact that dandelions are edible, but I made the mistake of using the, like trying to flesh this out a little bit. So you plant cucumbers and you come back to the patch 3 days later and dandelions are coming up. And then one of my guys is like, that's good survival food, though. So now we're talking about edible dandelions and how great dandelions are, which they are. Mm-hmm. But working through the, like, everything rebels. You go to, you know, it's our job to master the world and to steward it, and everything rebels. Nothing is easy. Everything is painful. And then also tagged the, like, dust comes up twice here. Mm-hmm. The serpent eats dust and Adam goes back to dust. So who's winning? Like, Adam becomes serpent food. The serpent definitively won that one.
Right. Micah, what did you do with this section?
We ended up going on a tangent about Lent. Because from dust you are, into dust you'll return. And like, we ended up talking about how on Good Friday you're reminded of that. And the idea is you're reminded that you really do, like, apart from Jesus, like, you really, that's it. Like, you have death. But that, and it's kind of pointing to this idea, and it's not the end. But yeah, that's kind of all we touched on, the dust thing.
And then we go on to Adam named his wife Eve because she would become the mother of all the living. Tim, you already mentioned this. Did you get into it more than that?
Explain
the meaning of Eve.
We hit it really, really hard.
Okay.
Because this is the, you know, again, I called back to the, like, wrecking the convertible on your 16th birthday. He broke the world. God breaks down all the consequences. And, you know, the sum of it is there's going to be a rematch. But in the meantime, everything about your life just got really, really hard and you're going to die. And in the face of that, he turns around and, like, the sensible thing to do would be to name his wife Death. Because we're all going to die now.
Yeah.
And what he does instead is name his wife Life, because there's going to be a rematch and somehow we're going to live. We're going to win. Like, that's a tremendous act of faith. And it's huge. It's really important.
Yeah.
So we hit that pretty hard.
Yeah, this is the closest we get to kind of redemption in Genesis 3, is that apparently Adam gets it. He took it to heart.
Yeah, he heard that first bit.
Yeah. And goes and names his wife Eve. Did you get into the name?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we talked about how, yeah, all of, similar thing. All of these things have just happened. And then they get this promise, and Adam names his wife the mother of the living, and how that's a recognition of the promise that this is not the end of the story.
Yeah. All right. Then we move on to the Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them, and then withheld or kicked them out of the garden so they wouldn't be able to eat the tree of life and eat it. And then he drove them out to the east of the garden. What'd you do with that portion, Micah?
We kind of spent a while on that. We talked about how it's a picture of Jesus' sacrifice. And yeah, I just dropped the Jesus stuff in right away, but that might be me, my teacheriness getting in the way a little bit. I don't know. I would love to perfect the art of telling the story more, but we talked about how that's like directly a picture of Jesus, and like Jesus's sacrifice covers us. And we also went into the, like, he sewing the leaves together, which I had never noticed before until I read in your book, that Jesus rejects that, like their own, their own way of kind of making the situation better.
Yeah, their own covering wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Well, and their own covering also doesn't. There's not a good way to say this, but, it's much less effective. Let's face it. Stitching leaves together versus leather. Like, come on now.
Some of my kids were like, well, maybe it was in a tropical place and it was really big leaves. I'm like, okay, but still.
But still. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just, and this is a really interesting, that's a really interesting picture of, like, we healing the wound lightly, right?
Yeah.
Not coming to terms with how bad the situation is.
Right.
And coming up with some sad little band-aid to slap on it that doesn't really meet the need of what's happening. And God's answer to this is, oh, it's much like God. Next thing that happens is God traumatizes them. He slaughters animals in front of, like, this has not happened before, and skins them. And you're going to wear the skins of the dead things. And you cannot live without death now. That's just how this works. Sorry about it. Like, you broke the world. This is how it works now.
Yeah.
Which is where we majored on the, like, this is how it works. You live because other things die. And that's your life now that the world is broken.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. One thing we talked about is like, I was like, how many of you guys have ever done the thing where you do something where you know it's wrong? And so then you try to do a bunch of other good things that day to kind of like feel like God is not upset at you. And they were kind of like, yeah, we've done that. And I was like, this is kind of what's happening there. Right. And that's just not how it works. They have to put their faith in Jesus to provide, or Jesus hadn't hit the planet yet, but they have to put their faith in God to provide the sacrifice. Yeah. They were like, oh, okay.
So what's the deal with this thing about them not being able to have access to the tree of life? Did you explain that to the kids, Tim?
I've got several guys that for weeks now, as soon as the tree of life entered the story, like, where is it? Where's the garden? Where's the tree of life? Where is it now? Just really want to know. And so it came up again as a like, okay, so is the angel still guarding it? Like, well, if it still exists, if God didn't just like turn it to slag during the flood, then I imagine the angel is still on duty at the bottom of the Persian Gulf somewhere in case a random diver wanders by or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The world that then was perished. It's really hard to get past the boundary of the flood and see what was the world like then. So we touched on you need to be able to die. Like our relationship with sin now is such that we need to be able to die in order to be raised. This is where I did cheat. So don't feel bad that you Jesus it up through here. That's a good thing to do.
Absolutely.
I didn't do it. Where I did cheat into the story is from where we stand now, we know that we need to be able to die in order to be rid of sin. And so God is preventing them from putting themselves in a position where they can't die. And then I cheated real hard on the flaming sword. So we did the thought experiment. Okay, you want to go back into the garden where you can walk with God. What happens to you? Well, you die. Well, yes, how do you die? Do you get drowned? Do you get crushed? Do you get, you know, what happens? Well, you get cut up with a flaming sword. So what happens? Well, you get cut up and you get burned. Right. So when you send an animal instead, it gets cut up and it gets burned.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a like, oh, like, yeah, we're going to see a lot of that in the Old Testament. And that like, everybody kind of knows that.
Yeah.
So it registers as a, oh, so now the way back to God, like you get cut in pieces and set on fire. That's how that works.
Nice. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of Chapter 3. Any final thoughts? No pressure. All right. Have a great week, and we will talk to you next time on the Bible Class Debrief.